Welcome to the People of Relic and EKR podcast, where you're going to hear the stories of the people that work at these two amazing advertising agencies. Relic focuses on tourism, and EKR works with a variety of businesses to help people get the right message to the right people at the right time. And we have amazing people in our organization, and I am going to interview them to hear the unique stories and backgrounds that they have to help you better get to know the people of Relic and EKR. Julie Sheffield, thank you for joining me on the People of Relic and EKR podcast. How are you doing?
Doing good. Nervous being behind the mic because usually I'm the one, you know, running the show. So it's weird being interviewed. I don't get to do this very often.
I'm impressed at how long you avoided this conversation.
Oh, a long time. For a long time, I was the one who made the schedule. So I was like, oh, I just don't have to put myself on the schedule. And then I passed that torch on to Annabelle and she's like, oh, you can't get out of this anymore.
That's what I like about Annabelle. She doesn't let you off the hook.
No, she keeps me accountable.
Well, Julie, so let's tell everybody why you're in a weird position today compared to where you normally are. Tell us what you do.
So I am the podcast manager at Relic plus EKR. So I kind of run the product. I oversee a lot of the day-to-day operations, and usually I'm the one recording people, not the one being recorded. So I guess that's why it's weird for me today to be behind the mic.
Honestly, it's weird for me too to have you actually speaking into the microphone instead of just holding up your hand and telling me to stop or something like that. Like, this is different.
Yeah, I know. I can't mess up. Otherwise, I'm going to have to put myself in next year's blooper reel, and that would be quite the moment.
Yep. This is your karma episode right here. Well, so Julie, and you know how this goes because you've been a part of many of these conversations, but I want to learn what it was like growing up as, well, at that time, Julie Ackerson.
Yeah. So Julie Ackerson, I was born in Columbus, Ohio, and well, not in a sketchy little apartment, in a hospital, but we lived in a sketchy little apartment. My dad was in optometry school at Ohio State. We lived there for a couple of years and, you know, my little self just running around while he was trying to get grad school done. I'm sure I wasn't very helpful with his studies, but it was a fun life there. And then we moved to Heber City, Utah from there, which I lived for most of my life. So we moved into, we called it the Little White House because it was a house that was white and it was little. We lived there for a couple of years, moved around a little bit in town, and then, you know, settled in kind of the eastern half of Heber. So I loved it there. It was a beautiful place. I had some really great friends, really great school experience that gave me a lot of the opportunities I have right now.
Great. You know, it's funny when you said I lived in the Little White House, I was thinking, okay, this must be like some historical landmark in Heber or something like that. Nope. You guys just called it the Little White House because it was little white and it's a house.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Well, so, and to be clear, you grew up in Heber and not in Midway. And we just always like to make that clarification for Colby.
Yes. Yeah. I know how big of a fan Colby is of Heber. So I wanted to make sure everyone knows that I'm from Heber and not from Midway.
Great. Thanks for pointing that out. So you said that your dad was in optometry school, and obviously you were very little at the time. You guys were only there for a couple of years. Do you remember what it was like being the daughter of somebody that was in grad school, or was that kind of before you really can remember?
Yeah, I don't really remember a lot from that time of my life. I was very young. We moved, I think I was almost three. So right as like memories begin to be concrete. So I don't have a ton of concrete memories from Ohio. I do have a lot of memories from when my dad was starting his practice and the long hours and knocking down walls to make everything work, and late nights, you know, just running around being my crazy self. I'm sure driving my parents insane, but I have a lot of memories helping them build that. So that was kind of fun.
So he started a practice from scratch after going to grad school.
Yes. So he applied at a couple of different places and then was like, you know what? It's gonna be worth it in the long run to just do it myself. So my grandparents took out a second mortgage on their house to help them open their practice. My grandma was thrilled. She got some great tax benefits. She's like, this is really nice. And then, yeah, they bought a building. They started a practice from the ground up. It was just my mom and my dad for a long time. And then now they've got probably 15 employees and full time, and it's busy, but it's kind of what I grew up seeing and wanting to emulate someday.
Yeah. What was that like growing up and watching your dad build that business? And obviously there's a ton on the line if your grandma is taking out an extra mortgage on her house. I mean, that's a high pressure situation. What was that like growing up and watching your parents go through that?
You know, it really was such a unique opportunity to be able to experience that. Luckily, they were very successful starting off. Heber at that time was a small town, didn't really have any other optometrists. So it was a good decision of a place to start. But then, I don't know, I feel like I've always grown up seeing hard work firsthand and seeing the benefits of hard work firsthand. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't get to see that whole process. And I feel like sometimes my siblings kind of missed out because, you know, I'm the oldest and they're all younger than me. So I was there from the, you know, kind of the grunt work, the late nights. I was very young, but I understood what was happening. And I feel like sometimes they didn't get that same experience. And I feel like that definitely made me who I am today, being able to see that start from nothing, really, start from this massive loan that we didn't know how we're going to pay off to this successful business.
That's great. I want to ask you more about that, but before I do, I want to learn, just as you're growing up, what were some of your hobbies and activities that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, so I was always a very creative person. Much to my mother's dismay, my room was a disaster all the time, covered in like painting supplies, drawing supplies. I would cut up random objects and glue them together. I was that kind of kid where, you know, you could throw them outside with a pile of dirt and then come back an hour later and there's like, you know, the little tunnels through the dirt with the little rock army that can just, like, my brain can make something out of literally anything. So I feel like I had a lot of random hobbies of that creative side, as well as just kind of finding ways to entertain my younger siblings. Cause at that time we were, you know, building a business, which takes a lot of resources. So, I mean, we weren't rich. We had to kind of figure it out for ourselves. I remember we were finishing our basement in one of our houses that we lived in when I was probably 6 or 7. And there was
not the little white house.
Not the little white house, different house. And there was all of these blocks of wood left over from the construction guy who had framed the downstairs. And I remember thinking it was so cool. We had these, like, this big pile of random 2x4s. And we played with those for so, so long. Months and months of, like, we turned them into cell phones. We made little houses. We, like, you could give me a block of wood and I'd be happy for a long time.
Oh, that's cool. Well, it sounds like a unique and fun childhood environment to grow up in. And you talked about the principles of hard work that you learned. You know, I like to ask the question, was there a formative childhood experience that you felt like played a big part of who you are today? Is that what you would choose, is kind of watching your parents work hard and try to start a business? Or is there something else that maybe you'd want to talk about?
I think that definitely plays a big part in who I am today. I also want to give credit to something else that made me a big part of who I am today, and that was piano lessons. I started piano lessons. I was 5 years old. I was teeny tiny. My hands were not very big. And I had this piano teacher. She taught me piano for 15 years.
Wow.
So she's like a grandma to me. And I learned hard work through my parents, but then I learned hard work in a different way through her, through, you know, achieving something for yourself and learning how to work hard to really, you know, make something amazing. And that's where I learned to love music. I learned to love audio, which is what I do now. So I have a lot of memories of Monday afternoons. Every Monday afternoon for 15 years, I'd go to her house. I'd clunk away on her piano and she'd make me better slowly. I was a difficult student, but it definitely helped shape a lot who I am today.
That's really cool. And you know, you kind of touched on, you got into audio through piano, and I'd love to hear more about that journey as you kind of, you know, go off on your own. I know you went to school and then ultimately ended up at Relic and then ultimately Relic and EKR, right? So tell me a little bit about that journey and what led you here.
Yeah. So I was a senior in high school trying to decide what I wanted to do. I knew I liked music. I knew I liked art. I wanted to go into graphic design for a really long time. Was a big passion of mine. And there was this song contest my piano teacher was like, you know what, you should enter this. Like, I'm sure you could come up with something that's like passable. And I remember sitting down at the piano and I wrote the song and I took a step back. I was like, oh, that's not too bad. Like, that's pretty good. Let me play that again. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I'm going to send this in and I'm going to see what happens. So I sent it in and I won. And I was like, oh,
now, Julie, that's cool. Are we going to be able to play a little excerpt of that song in this episode? Can we do that?
I don't still have a recording of it. Oh. I could play it for you live, but that's a project for another
okay.
day.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. So I wrote this song and I won. There was tons of high schoolers in the state of Utah who, you know, sent in stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe I do have a talent for this. Up until that point, I hadn't ever really considered going into music. It had always been something that I loved and I loved doing, but I didn't really see that talent in myself until that happened. And I was like, oh, they invited me to this fancy gala and like presented me with this like award thing. I was like, this is crazy. Why is this happening to me? Like, I don't feel like I'm actually that good at this, but apparently I am. So I'm going to try it and I'm going to see what happens. So I applied for commercial music programs across the state of Utah. I applied at Snow College and I applied at UVU. And I got in at Snow College and I didn't get in at UVU. And I was like, well, okay, I guess I'm going to Snow College. And then something inside of me was like, no. Like, you can't go to Snow College. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, wait, but I got into the program that I wanted to get into at Snow College and I didn't get in at UVU. Like, if I go to UVU, what am I going to do? I'm going to go and take classes and not be in the program. And then I was like, I guess so. I guess that's what you're going to do. And so I go to UVU, not being accepted into the program that I wanted to be in. And I was really kind of distraught. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I want to do this, but they said I'm not good enough. And there's this other program who said I am good enough. So why am I here with this program that's like telling me that I'm not enough to be in their program? So I take music classes for a year. I hate it. It was terrible. It was so much pressure. And it was hard. And I decided at the end of the year to not reapply, even though I had a good shot after, you know, getting to know the professors and getting to know the program. I didn't enjoy what I was doing. I didn't see myself doing that for the rest of my life. And so I hit the point where I'm like, well, now what do I do? I looked at my credits. I was like, what's the easiest associate's degree I could get? Because I want to at least finish my associate's degree and then we'll go from there. It ended up being humanities, which people make fun of, but I loved getting to know more about like people and culture and the way that the world works from the human perspective. I thought was super interesting to me. I've always been a little bit of a nerd. And while I was finishing that, I got a new roommate who was in the digital cinema program. And she's like, oh, you should try digital audio. And I was like, what is that? Like, tell me more. I had never heard of it before. And I took one class. I was like, oh, yep, this is what I'm going to do. I like this. It's all the aspects I love about music expanded in a way that I didn't even know was possible, like into movies, into TV shows, into podcasts. There was just such a realm of possibility that I didn't even consider before.
Cool. Really interesting. Because I remember when we started working together, you were still teaching piano lessons and you were also managing the audio for a podcast that was being done by some people, I believe in Heber. And so I'd love to hear, you went down the audio path. It was interesting to you. How did you end up at Relic?
Yeah. So I was teaching piano. That was my full-time, I guess not full-time, I did it part-time, but it paid the bills for probably my first 3 years of college. I had at one point, I think 26 students was my most students I had at a time.
That's and a lot.
It was a lot. It was intense. And I loved it. I loved working with these kids and seeing them grow. I just recently stopped and it was really hard for me. I loved that part of my life. And my junior year of school, so probably like 3 years ago, I started working with this podcast called Midseason Moms is what it was called. And it was a, it was about these moms who all had kids going from being teenagers to being adults and navigating that part of life. And I thought it was super interesting what they were doing. It was just on Facebook. Someone wanted an intern. They paid me $20 an episode to edit it.
Wow.
I was like, you know what? I've never done this before. It sounds kind of fun. Like they don't really have it, have a budget. So like that's all they could spend. And so I did it and I loved it. I loved helping them like tell that story. I loved helping them kind of find their audience. COVID kind of shut it down, which was really sad. But at that point I had applied for a job at Relic. And I attribute getting this job to that podcast. So that $20 an episode is
it paid off.
Worth it in the long run. Yeah. You just never know how those super low paying internships or opportunities will pay off in the end.
Very cool. And then how did you discover us?
It was on Indeed. I was scrolling. I was piano lessons was fun, but I feel like I went through waves of being like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is so much work. I taught piano in Heber, so it was a 45-minute commute every week, and it was a lot with school. And I was like, I think I need something more long term, something more substantial, something where I can have mentors to learn from too, because piano lessons was just, it was just me and these kids and these kids' parents that were sometimes interesting to work with. Great most of the time, but there was a couple of situations that I was like, I cannot do this for the rest of my life. Yeah. So I applied and I got the interview and I got the job. I show up and my first day, it was Colby's birthday.
And what a day to start.
And there was pictures of his face taped all over the op, like 1,000 pictures of his face. And there was balloons everywhere. Like my whole desk was covered in balloons. I was like, what is this place that I started working at? What have I gotten myself into? And Colby was a great mentor to me right at first. Even if he didn't know much about podcasting himself, he was like, you know what, here it is. And I trust you. And we're going to just make this happen. On my first day, he's like, here's the files. I'm not really sure what to do with them. Good luck. And that's where I started.
No way. And how long ago was that?
It'll be 3 years in March.
Wow. So that means it was right before COVID.
Oh, it was 2 weeks and then everything shut down. I was like, yeah. And then COVID happened. I was like, I'm going to get fired. Like I'm going to lose my job. Everyone's losing their jobs. And you guys took a chance on me and on this podcast product that was so new at the time. It would have been so easy to just pull the plug, you know, like, oh, COVID's happening. Let's push this to later. Let's wait. But I thought it was really impressive that you had the sight to see into the future and be like, you know what, this is going to be something worth investing in now and not waiting until after this whole COVID thing calms down. So, and I appreciate that so much because I would not be where I am today without that opportunity.
Well, absolutely. And I'll be honest with you. I don't know that we would have pushed forward with the program if we weren't able to clearly see so early on that you were going to be able to handle it. And, you know, it was amazing that you picked everything up so quickly. You helped us improve our processes very quickly. And I'm curious, what was it like being as early in your career as you were, essentially your first job other than the podcast and the piano lessons that you were doing, what was it like to say, okay, I'm going to build this program? And I'm curious about what your thoughts were on what it could become when you started compared to what it is today.
Yeah. So when I started, I had only edited for that one mom podcast. They only had me do editing. I wasn't involved in any of the decision making, any of the strategy. So really when I started, I was brand new. Like I knew what a podcast was. I had edited like 3 or 4 episodes. I was like, I think I can do this, but I don't know. We'll see. And then hearing your show and interacting with some of the people that you had as guests on the show and seeing that networking opportunity that it provided for Relic, all of a sudden you have this door, you can, you know, reach out to somebody that you don't even know. You can't imagine, like, they're a celebrity in your eyes. You'd be like, hey, you want to be on my podcast? And they're like, oh yeah, that sounds great. And you bring them on, and then all of a sudden you're working together. Like, I remember Rob Wells, he was one of the very first episodes I edited when I started working here. And I remember he was thinking, he was such a cool guy. I was like, man, Rob is awesome. I'd love to work with him someday. And then he started the Intercoastal podcast, and it was so fun. Those early days, it was me and Natasha and Rob trying to figure out this whole podcast thing. he was such a great sport for kind of being our guinea pig, kind of being my guinea pig in my career. Like, I don't know if I'd be where I am right now without Rob either, you know, trusting our team enough to create that content for their organization, and be willing to try new things, be willing to fail. There was some not great episodes right at the beginning. Because we hadn't quite figured that out yet and developed the process that we have so smoothly now.
That's what's always impressed me so much about Rob, is when every other destination was saying, you know, we're shutting things down, we're not trying anything new, Rob pushed forward and said, no, we're committed to this, we're going to do it. And it's turned out to be such a cool part of our organization. And it's fun that you were here really from the very beginning, because I had someone on staff that was helping me produce my show, but we really hadn't dived into creating shows for other people yet. And it is fun that Rob was one of the first episodes that you did, because I remember at the end of that episode, I was like, hey, have you ever thought about doing a podcast? And I actually remember you being like, oh man, you know, like surprised that conversation happened. And then to see where it's evolved since then, we're what, coming up on 2.5 years, I think, of the Intercoastal podcast, which was our first destination podcast.
Yeah, I think it's getting close to 70 episodes, which is just, that's so much content. Like, if you think about, like, 25 minutes an episode times 60 episodes times, like, how fast people talk, that's just like, I did the math once and it was like a million words that they produced through this show that would have taken so long to type out and think through, and via like a blog post or a newsletter, to just be able to sit down and talk directly with your stakeholders, get the information directly from them, I think has been such a cool thing for their show and for all of our shows.
Awesome. Well, I'm curious, you know, now that the Destination Marketing Podcast Network is what it is, and you're managing, you know, several producers, lots of shows, did you think it was going to get to this point?
I had no idea. I had no idea what was in store for me. I was like, well, I'll get this internship and then we'll go from there. I wanted to get a job in a music studio when I started doing audio. And it took me a while to see the value of podcasting. Like, I've never been a big podcast fan. And I think it's funny, but I'm still not. Like, I don't sit down to unwind after a day of editing podcasts and listen to another podcast. Like, a lot of the time, I'm like, that's the last thing I'd want to do.
Well, for you, though, I would say that would be taking your work home with you, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's part of it. But I feel like being able to recognize that value over the years and see that turn into tangible results for people has been super cool.
Awesome. Do you have a couple of favorite episodes that stick out to you?
Oh, there's so many. At this point, I've probably overseen or produced 500 episodes. I wouldn't be surprised. One of our shows, The Magic of Kanab, has been super fun because Camille, she's awesome, but she will kind of let us be creative and come at her with ideas. She'll be like, you know what, just pitch it to me and then we'll go from there. And we pitched this one episode talking about the east half of Zion's National Park and why that part, which is in their destination in Kane County, is more appealing to visitors than, you know, the main entrance, because there's less crowds. It's just as beautiful, just as scenic. And we were like, you know what, let's go in the park and talk to people and see what they think. And I was like, I have no idea if Camille's going to buy off on this, but let's pitch it. And shout out to Annabelle. This was her idea. And we pitched it and she's like, yeah, I love it. Like, give me pricing. Like, how much is it going to cost me for you guys to come down here? And we did it and it was so fun. And we hiked around and we talked to people. We met people from all over the world, Germany, Switzerland, Ireland, like everywhere. There were so many people, and hearing them and hear their words about the destination firsthand, like being able to ask them, like, what is your favorite part about being in this part of the world? Like, why from all the way across the world did you decide to come stay in Kane County, Utah, and go to Zion's National Park? So I thought that was so fun to record and be able to have that opportunity to do that. But I think it also turned out as a cool episode and a cool asset for the client to be able to hear these testimonials from people, from actual visitors, about why they chose to come to their destination and what their favorite thing has been.
Yeah, Julie, that sounds like several great projects to be involved in, but to go actually and experience it in person and have that tangible experience, it takes what has been audio for you and brings it all to life. I'm sure that had to be a lot of fun. What does the future look like, Julie? Tell me what your goals and aspirations are for the remainder of your career.
Oh man, that's a big question. And I feel like I get asked that a lot because I graduated college 6 months ago and I'm already
sorry, I laugh years. Because you have so much responsibility in our organization already. And you graduated 6 months ago.
Yeah. The other day, Marcy, she asked for all the people who had graduated this year. And I was like, oh yeah, I wonder who graduated this year. I was like, wait a second. I graduated this year. I graduated 6 months, like less than 6 months ago. And to already be where I am in my career is such a blessing, to be able to graduate college and have these opportunities and be able to interact with the high caliber people that I've been able to get to know has been amazing. I see myself here for the foreseeable future. My husband and I have a small business, helping creators. It's called Creator Lux. We do video editing, we do audio editing, we do strategy for specifically influencers and YouTube creators. So it's been fun to see that kind of grow throughout this past year. That's something that we've started just after graduation. And this job has been able to allow him to kind of dedicate the time necessary to launching that, which has been a big blessing too, to be able to be like, you know what, this is the time in our lives to take that jump and just go in full time to that. So he does that full time right now, which has been so fun for him and fun for me to watch, and get to work on some of those projects as well. So I could see that being an exciting opportunity going forward as well.
Awesome. You know, based on your trajectory, let's see, you're 6 months into your career and you're running our podcast program. So in five years, you probably should be CEO of a Fortune 100 company if you stay on this trajectory.
I know. Yeah, it's been fast. It's been crazy, but it's been so fun.
Awesome. Well, it's been incredible to work with you, Julie, and to see your growth, because it is amazing how quickly we just started testing early on. If we give her a little project, how will it go? You know, and every time you just nailed it, and the projects got bigger and larger in scope and more significant. And I really feel like, you know, we'll call back to earlier in the episode that principle of hard work that you learned early on, I think that really has paid off in the trajectory of what you've been able to do here at Relic and EKR. And I still think we've only scratched the surface of where it can go. So it's been fun to work with you on this, Julie. Is there anything that, you know, if people that are going to be working with you or clients, anybody like that, is there anything they need to know about you?
So since graduating, I've had the opportunity to become a manager, which I've never done before. I've never managed people. And growing up, I've always watched my mom. She was the office manager for my dad's business, manage people and have to, you know, have difficult conversations and help people grow. And it's been so fun to me to go from coworker to manager and be able to, I feel like, see what you saw in me early on in other people, like looking at my team and recognizing their strengths and giving them projects that play to those strengths. Like, I'm not afraid to, you know, give people responsibility and ownership on projects and you know, kind of let them take the lead. I feel like everyone has done that in their own way. I've tried to look for places where they enjoy working and where they excel and find things to help cultivate those skills and help them develop confidence. I feel like that's something that I've gotten a lot from working here, is just confidence in myself as the work that I'm doing has been, you know, successful, and helping other people recognize that in themselves too.
Yeah. That's one of the best parts of being a leader is when you start to learn what your team is capable of by giving them opportunities. And then when they actually, when they nail it, it's super exciting. So that's a great point and a great quality that you have there. Well, thanks again, Julie. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
This is one of the many stories of the people of Relic and EKR. I hope you'll stick with us and listen to the other stories that we release on a weekly basis and get to know our whole team. We've got some amazing people here, and we hope you enjoy.